It's one thing to say you know a thing or two about filmmaking. It's another to say you've made not one, but two films that have, at separate times, been recognized as the highest grossing films of all time. So to say director James Cameron knows a thing or two about filmmaking is quite the understatement. The man who brought us films like Terminator 1, 2, Aliens, The Abyss, and Titanic has once again returned to the big screen with the first of many planned sequels to the current highest grossing film of all time, Avatar. So, today on Scripter Screen, we're discussing one of cinema's most celebrated and controversial directors of all time and his newest film, Avatar, Return of the Jungle Man.
It's the way of water.
All right, hit the music. Welcome back to all you lovely listeners to Scripter Screen, your number one source for spending way too much money on a passion project. Zach, you and I know all about that. I'm one of your co-hosts, Christopher Kitchen, alongside my other most special co-host, and yet not so blue, Dabba-Dee-Dabba-Dai, co-host Zach Strachman.
That's me.
Zach, how are you doing this fine recording evening?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing pretty well. Speaking of Eiffel classic songs from the 90s, did you know there's a song right now? It's with David Guetta or whatever his name is, the little producer. He makes like all the
if you're about to talk about that where he samples that song. Yes, because the last time I was at your place, you played it.
It's just important that I make sure everybody else knows this, because at the same time, I didn't realize it's also in the song title. I didn't know the title of the song, and I'm like listening to this song for a long time, and I'm like, why do I know this sample, this beat from? Because it was in one of the, well, probably my favorite song of, like, I don't know, my very early childhood. Zach, we're finally here.
It has been a long time coming.
The Jungleman has indeed returned, and so have we.
Yep, he is back. He came, and so did we.
I gotta say, there's a lot of fun controversy surrounding this film and all the news about it.
The lead up to this film was like watching, it was almost like watching a man trying to torpedo his own movie by being just the most pompous ass he could be.
I like the way you put that, torpedo his own movie.
I mean, yeah, I was going to try and kind of compare it to something, but we're not in the spoiler section yet. But we are going to get into spoilers, but first we'll give our non-spoilers and then we'll dig into it. But yeah, I feel like the lead up to this, James Cameron's like, how much of an asshole can I be and get away with it?
Turns out a lot. I want to say that I think that was the MO going into like all the media and everything surrounding the film over the last couple of months. If anything, like all the interviews, all the articles and stuff that I've read, it, you know, and what's funny is like, if we want to compare this to like where we were last year, this time around when Spider-Man No Way Home came out.
Yeah.
And there was a lot more hype and excitement and intrigue versus this time around. There's a lot of burnout. There's a lot of, I don't know what this guy is saying anymore. Why is he making these comments?
You know, it's so funny because, like, I think about, you know, filmmakers when they talk seemingly out of their ass, and you go, like, listen, I think you've had one too many rodeos, one too many trips around the sun. Maybe it's time to stop saying, like, crazy shit and just, like, you know, whatever. But, like, you look at his filmography, James Cameron, as a director, has not made many films.
No, he's kind of specialized. But I feel like he, you know, as a director, yes. But he has produced a lot of projects.
Oh, yeah.
And also his company as well.
Absolutely. But, I mean, just in terms of, like, having his hand on the steering wheel.
Yeah.
He really has kept it kind of just, you know, close to the chest. Close to the vest. I don't know. He's made only a few films. So it's not like there's some directors where it's, you look at their filmography and it's just sprawling. Like, take someone like Ridley Scott, who has made several films. Not all of them are good. a good number of them are good, but not he's had a lot of misses as of late.
Yeah. You know what's interesting? I'm looking at, like, I just had felt like I have never Googled this, and it just dawned on me to Google James Cameron's net worth, which, according to celebritynetworth.com, is around about $700 million.
Hmm.
And I feel like for somebody with only 10 films, maybe two really big box office hits, I mean, every one of them, he's had a lot of box office hits of, like, the directed films that he's done. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I don't know. I feel like I was expecting more.
It feels that way, especially considering, like, he is responsible for, like, some very, like, kind of, like, iconic things in filmmaking, like, in cinema history.
Yeah.
He's behind some of, like, the most iconic lines in cinema.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess, you know, here's the thing. I feel like if I told someone, hey, do you know Terminator? They'd say, yeah. If I said, do you know Arnold Schwarzenegger? They'd say, yeah. If I said, where's this line from? I'll be back. They'd be like, oh, yeah. Or I'd say, you know, Titanic or Avatar. And they go, yeah, I know those films. I know that. Like, that's easy. But if I was like, hey, do you know James Cameron? I don't know if, like, the average Joe is going to know who that is.
Yeah.
It's not like a name that grabs you.
I would say, like, I don't think he has, like, the same kind of gravitas as, like, Steven Spielberg.
No.
Or even, like, Martin Scorsese or, like, you know, some of the more, the actual greats.
Yeah, and I mean, like, it's not like, even, like, someone like Tarantino, who has a very similar number of movies under his belt. I feel like Tarantino, again, Quentin Tarantino is a lot poppier of a name also.
I would also say the quality of his works are far, far surpassed James Cameron, just because his films far make surpass money.
And also just more entertaining. But, yeah. But yeah, James Cameron, I feel like he's like the white bread of good filmmakers.
I'll tell you what, though. I am looking, you know, James Cameron's films, they have collected a number of let's say, interesting awards.
Yeah.
Of let's, like, going from Aliens to The Way of Water. On this list on his Wikipedia, it's Aliens, The Abyss, Terminator 2, True Lies, Titanic, Avatar, and this film.
Yeah.
He's received 41 nominations just from the Academy, not him, but, like, the films in general. 41 right. nominations from the Academy Awards and 21 wins. And I believe he himself also has, like, an Academy Award in his name, right?
Probably. I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah, he's won for Best Director. He's won for Picture, so he got it for producing, as well as Avatar, the original. He didn't win anything. And interesting enough, he was also nominated for editing that film. What a jackass!
Here's the thing. It's his passion project, man.
I suppose
it's his big blue baby.
Let's talk big blue babies, because
first
there
though,
are quite a number of them in this film.
It's worth mentioning, there's been a lot of talk that this film has to become the third or fourth highest grossing film of all time to break even, with, like, I think they kind of, people are gauging the final, like, out the door budget with, like, everything included, somewhere in the neighborhood of, like, 450 to 500 million.
Yeah, it's, like, an outrageous fucking
just,
number.
Just way too much money. That being said, it's been out for 2 weeks, it's been 14 days, and globally it has grossed $1.1 billion.
So, you know, they're
so kind of... I'm just gonna go here, I'm gonna type in highest grossing movies of all time.
And we he did have the claim, though.
I need to know like how close is he to that finish line.
Remember at one point where he was talking about in one of these articles, we talked about it on a previous episode,
Oh yeah, I should mention that Chris and Zach recorded a previous episode about the first Avatar film, but sadly it was lost because of technical difficulties. But I assure you it was probably really good.
That the film needed to be like the second or third highest grossing film of all time, mm-hmm. just for them to break even in general. And I'm like, how? How do you put so much pressure? Because in all reality, that number, I think that's calculated there, mm-hmm. is, I want to say, also taking into consideration some of the other film, like the third film that they've, quote unquote, have filmed.
Like 90% of, right.
And so I'm like, well, why not just split the number up then? Like, why are you putting all this at the same time? If this film bombed, which at the moment doesn't seem like it is, you know, which is relative, you know, way to phrase it. I feel like it's just kind of ridiculous. You know, it's so interesting. Like, it is one of the most expensive films ever made behind like the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise and the Avengers films and stuff.
Well, I'm looking at the list now. So right now, Avatar: The Way of Water, or Avatar: Return of the Jungleman, as we like to call it,
here at Scripture Screen,
is currently sitting at the 32nd highest grossing film of all time. And before, you know, if anyone is out there going, if you adjust for inflation, it's actually Gone with the Wind. I don't care. No one's gonna fucking go see Gone with the Wind anymore. I've seen it like twice, and it was.
Good.
But if this is to supposedly, you know, break even on everything they have thrown at this movie, to become profitable, fourth and fifth highest grossing film is what it needs to hit. The fourth highest grossing film of all time right now is Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens, at $2,068,000,000. So if he can crack 2.069, nice, then he'll have done it. Fourth highest grossing film of all time.
So you want to hear an interesting metric that I just kind of did the math on myself?
Yes.
So the original Avatar, mm-hmm. on its opening weekend in 2009, made $77 million. And that's just domestic market, right? We all know it did very well internationally.
And but I'm not mistaken, in its first weekend, Return of the Jungleman made more than that.
Well, that's $2009. Adjusted for inflation, you know, to like end of 2022, it's mm-hmm. about $106 million. $107, okay. actually. So, and Return of the Jungleman, in its first weekend, has done $134 million.
Interesting.
So, did better in the domestic market. Now we want to talk international. Who has the highest opening right now? It looks like France had the highest opening on December 14th.
Which is crazy because, like,
The European market, we want to look Asia, South Korea, 19 million.
South Korea, really? Because I would have guessed China. I understand, and I mean, I'm not trying to make generalizations here, but I understand from my limited understanding of foreign cinema markets.
China has 56 million. I actually just
scrolled I was going to say Asia. Asia goes crazy for these movies.
What's crazy is, like, to say that you almost forget these things.
That sounds like a generalization. I'm not trying to generalize that, like, Asians like this. I'm saying, like, as I understand, this is the kind of, like, things that, like, really sell well over there.
These metrics, according to Box Office Mojo, here's how they separate this, by the way. So they separate the markets through, like, continent. So we have in the first, diagram, it's Europe, Middle East, and Africa. And the next one, it's Latin America. The next one, it's Asia Pacific. In Asia Pacific includes areas like Taiwan, Japan, Hong Kong, Thailand, Vietnam, South Korea, India. And then at the very bottom is China, very bottom of the fucking webpage. And it has their very own with just their named. And it's the biggest number on this entire list for a singular region. They don't even group it with the rest of Asia. And so that's just insane to me that they made half as much in their opening weekend.
Pretty crazy.
Jesus.
All right. Well, that's a lot
enough
of
with the numbers.
That's a lot of, dollars and cents.
I was going to say, unfortunately, we didn't have any bets this year. There were no things called. We're just surprised we even got the movie at all.
Here's my question. What do you think? I mean, just kind of in round numbers, where do you think this train is stopping? If I had to guess,
just at the end of its regular theatrical release,
its first theatrical run, I'm going to say
We're already saying first theatrical run.
Oh, it's going to get re-released, of course.
You know how many re-releases the original had?
Like three, right?
Re-releases, it had four.
Okay, God.
In 2010, 2020, 2021, and again this year in 2022.
God, Jesus.
That's four. Anyway, so five total, five releases total.
I wasn't counting this year. I would say that at the end of its first theatrical run, this Avatar 2 will kind of peter out at about 2.1 billion.
You think 2.1? Where would that set it on the list? I would set it like fourth.
That's like fourth, I think.
Was that right behind Spider-Man?
Something like that. You know, I
think Spider-Man's number two now, or three.
So if they got if he got 2.1, that would put him at third behind Titanic, or fourth.
Oh, is that
fourth behind Titanic? Excuse me.
Wait, of all time or adjusted for inflation?
Of all time. Well, I mean, I'm not adjusting for inflation. Nobody cares.
I was going to say. Wait, yes, Titanic is still number three?
Dude, if you adjust for inflation...
No, I just didn't realize that Titanic is number three.
Yeah, because they re-released it a bunch of times. He re-released it in like 3D and stuff.
What a dick!
Yeah, I know. He's.
Why did he do that? I don't remember No Way Home going down.
You know how, he re-released Avatar just to get it a little bit further than Endgame?
You know what's crazy is that Disney is just rolling in all this money.
I know. It's disgusting. Anyway, we're done talking about money.
Where is it going to place? I don't think it's going to break $2 billion, dude.
You don't think so? Okay. That's
I think by the end of it, end of this year?
It did a billion. No, in general. I mean, it did a billion in 2 weeks.
In general, yeah, maybe it might pass $2 billion, but I mean, like, honestly, I also don't want it to pass $2 billion.
No, I don't either. But
like at this point, like, I'd rather Top Gun Maverick go to number one.
Yeah, but they're not going to re-release that.
No, well, they've already re-released it three times this year.
It'll be
in the year of its release. It's already also. If I am going to make a claim here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Avatar Way of Water will win Best Picture. It could get nominated. I don't think it will win. Top Gun Maverick has more of an opportunity to win and get nominated for Best Picture.
Excuse me. Award. I'm sorry.
You're excused.
I'm allergic to the truth.
That's your toxic trait.
Oh, my God. Anyway, let's talk about Avatar 2 Return of the Jungle Man. Chris, do you have like a synopsis that you can give our lovely listeners?
Yeah.
One that's not like 20 paragraphs long.
How about this? This is one brought to you by Christopher Kitchen's mouth.
Oh.
We come to the end of Avatar 1, and some humans leave, some humans stay. And then Jake Sully and his family grow, and he learns to be more Na'vi than ever. And then new foes arise, and old foes return. And
I really feel like it's only old foes. Anyway,
regardless, nonsense ensues, and he must leave the jungle find a new home in the water, and then learn that way. You know what I'm saying?
That is true.
That's dude. That's what this movie is.
Yeah. So
I mean, if you want something more formal, I also have something.
So let's break this next part into two little bits. The first little bit is, and let's keep this brief so we can dive like the Way of Water into spoiler territory, so we don't have to dance around topics. But little bit the first. What did you think of original Avatar? Now I'm gonna put it out there. There may or may not be a scrapped Avatar 1 episode that, depending on how things go, may or may not see the light of day.
Yeah, it did not.
But what did you think of Avatar the first? Very briefly. And then what do you... Non-spoiler, what did you think of Return of the Jungle Man?
The first Avatar film, I think... I've watched it several times. Only once or twice in theaters. I think in the beginning, I thought it was cool, interesting. At the time that I saw it, I was, I don't know, like 15, 14.
It was 2009, younger. So.
2009, born in 95. Do the math. No. I mean, 13, 14. Either way, it hit at a good time. But then as I grew older and as I started watching it, and then the realization came, it's Pocahontas. We get the story. The writing's not that amazing. In fact, it's very basic. You and I tried rewatching it together, and then we realized, wow, like, I don't know that this film really holds up. Also, it has a weird aesthetic to it. Like, there's some sort of vision. It's, and I'm not talking about, like, the animation and stuff. It just doesn't look like a film. And that's always bothered me about it. I don't know. Like, there's a lot of motion smoothing. There's a lot of other things. And it's not just my TV. It's just the film in general. Like, the colors is almost too poppy. And especially, like, on the human parts themselves versus maybe in the forest when it's just the Na'vi people. It looks great. Regardless. Overall, that movie's, like, 6 out of 10. It's entertaining. It didn't break new ground in terms of storytelling. Visuals at the time were pretty great. But they do not hold up to this day, dude. That shit looks like rubber. That shit looks like not amazing. We saw shit through phase, you know, through other things and just in terms of the geometry and everything. A lot of improvement was needed to be. Now, that's what I think about the film. Like I said, 6 out of 10. It's, you know, it's enjoyable, entertaining, so to speak. It can be grand. It's interesting. But a lot of the stuff is very predictable. Now, what do I think about Avatar culture? I don't understand why. Doesn't make sense. Theme park doesn't make sense. Absolutely why they invested in like five films sense. Doesn't make sense. It's like, just because something was very expensive and very successful critically, I feel like you really missed your chance, regardless of whatever reason, to capitalize on that. Even though, I mean, obviously now it's doing, you know, $1 billion in 2 weeks, right? Maybe it hasn't, but at the same time, I just think there's too little too late. Now, come to the film, non-spoilery thought. I think for a film that's 3 hours and 12 minutes, right?
Yeah.
That's the runtime of The Way of Water.
It's a beefy boy.
That is a beefy boy. I think there was easily, the first 40 minutes of the film was a lot of ketchup. They had to tell you about a lot of things.
And a little bit of mustard.
Not even, dude. And the thing is, like, I hate hot dogs with just ketchup. I need mustard and relish, or I don't want the hot dog. I'd rather eat a hot dog plain. Sauerkraut's good on, like, a sausage, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. And, like, anyway.
But it's, so for that reason alone, too long. You know, there was a lot of stuff that I felt like could have been worked in a lot easier. You could have left some things to the imagination, or, like, just maybe, like, dropped hints. Like, a little more subtlety would have been nice. Visually, looks incredible. There were a lot of interesting gags as well. A lot of the dialogue was not amazing.
Oh, we'll get into that.
Characters, you know, all of it seemed very tropey in a sense, but I mean, the story also catered to that, you know, because there was a mix of like coming of age stuff as well as like they had to tread some new ground. And then also they paid homage to the original film that only happened 10 years ago, Zach.
Oh, we will talk about that.
So that, like, there's just, it was filled with like a lot of cliches and stuff. Was it any better than the first film? I don't know. I would say they rate pretty equally on that degree. I'm not upset that I saw it. I wanted to see it, you know, it's kind of like playing Kingdom Hearts 3. I just needed to see it, except with a lot less emotional attachment.
Right, you know? Okay. That's fair.
And this one, it was just more of like the novelty of it. I'm like, there's no way in hell this thing is real. And turns out it is.
Nice.
I also did not like the ending.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that in a moment.
I realize that's very, very general, non-spoiler stuff, so I'm very much looking forward to getting into spoiler territory.
Yeah, well, we're going to get to. I mean, I feel the same way about...
You want to start from the beginning?
Well, I mean, Avatar 1, I think visually at the time it was unparalleled. Now, like you said, we were watching it for the Lost episode, and it's, I don't want to say like it looks like shit now. It still looks good. If you're watching it and you're kind of like, you know, just along for the ride, once you settle into it, the visuals are fine. They do seem a little rubbery now, 13 years later. And on top of that, everything's shiny in it. Everything has a sheen to it.
There's a lot of gloss.
There's no texture. I feel like nothing is like nothing has grit to it.
Yeah.
Everything just looks smooth, and I don't like that. But it's okay. I would say the best compliment I can give Avatar 1, the first, is it's a very watchable film. I can turn my brain off almost completely, and just I can watch it, and I can be like, just kind of be swept away by the spectacle of it all. The second you start listening to people talk, is when I really feel like it kind of hits a flat tire. And over time, I've just come to kind of not resent the film, but just really be unimpressed with like how little a lot of effort was put in. I mean, we talked about this before, but like Unobtainium, you couldn't do anything better than Unobtainium for the thing that's hard to obtain. I don't get it. I don't understand how like they couldn't do like just one more pass through on the script. It's fine. The movie's 13 years old. It happened. It made a lot of money. We're moving on. Return of the Jungle Man. In a lot of ways, I have similar thoughts. I think I enjoyed it more than I thought I was going to, just because I think this one, it's easier to kind of get swept up into the story and the lore of it all, because there's no setup needed. Yeah. We're going in knowing what the whole shtick with Avatar is. So like when I see Jake Sully hair bonding with a horse or something, I'm not like, why I need to be explained and stuff. No, I know. And so the movie's not wasting too much time with explaining how the world works. We know how the world works. We can move on to just kind of plot and action and stuff. And I think the action in this movie is superb. The effects in this movie are superb. I think it's a more engaging film than the first one. I don't know if it's better, though. And I had a good time, like 7 out of 10. It's a pretty film. There's a lot of times.
I'll say, like, I think I agree with you, though, that, like, I was able to kind of, even though I, you know, I'm a little older now from watching the first film, so I am a little more analytical, like, when I watch these films. When you said that you can just kind of turn your brain off and watch it, like, I did to a certain degree turn my brain off and watch it, and I tried to enjoy it as much as I could, but I just couldn't help but notice all the bits and pieces of just upon my first and only viewing as of now, as of this recording, that, like, things in the new one that did just bother me, and not necessarily that took me out, but I did have, like, a commentary that, you know, maybe in the future, will it continue to prevent me from just enjoying the film? I don't know. We'll see.
All I'll say is, for the most part, I liked it. I definitely don't hate the film, and I'm honestly more interested in what they're gonna do with the future of the series than anything else. But before we dig into spoilers, I do just want to kind of just spotlight the different people working on this film, because I like to give credit where credit's due. So the film was directed by James Cameron, screenplay by James Cameron, Rick Jaffa, and Amanda Silver. They worked on the story along with Josh Friedman and Shane Salerno. Based on Avatar by James Cameron, produced by James Cameron and John Landau, starring, we'll get to the cast in a minute, cinematography by Russell Carpenter, edited by Steven Rivkin, David Brenner, Joe Rafua, and, hey, James Cameron, music by Simon Franklin. Runtime of 192 fucking minutes. Jesus. All right, let's look at this cast. We got some returning people. We got some new people. We have Sam Worthington, the poster boy of 2009 to 2011 action films. He's white. He's muscly, and we all like him. Sam Worthington as Jake Sully, Zoe Saldana as Neytiri, Sigourney Weaver as Kiri. I have opinions about this character. Stephen Lang as Colonel Miles, the Jungleman Quaritch. Kate Winslet as Ronal. I don't know how to pronounce. Honestly, we'll get into a lot of these like side characters. Cliff Curtis as Tonawari. Joel David Moore as Dr. Norm Spellman. He's from the first one. CCH Pounder as Moat. Eddie Falco as Carmela Soprano. Brendan Cowell as Captain Mick Scoresby. A lot of these other characters really don't matter. Jamie Flatters as Natayim. Britton Dalton as Loak. Who's the kid who... Jack Champion as Spider. And then a bunch of other people who are, like, in the film for, like, 2 seconds. There's Giovanni Ribisi. He's back as... I just found out his name. Parker Selfridge. The selfish guy is named Selfridge, Chris.
Because he made himself rich?
Yeah, God, I just... You don't have to be lazy with writing. Okay, we're going into spoilers. 3, 2, 1. If you haven't seen Avatar: The Way of Water, go help this movie become the third, fourth highest grossing film of all time and come back and listen to us. Am I right?
Zach, you sound so defeated.
I just like,
been noticing this whole time. Like, I don't know if you sound excited or just completely disappointed.
I don't know. I mean, I'm going to be, I'm excited to talk about it. But it's just like going through and like looking at stuff. When I see stuff like the selfish human, the guy who is supposed to be the character embodiment of human selfishness, and his name is Selfridge, I'm like, they worked so hard to make sure every plant and animal on the planet was like ecologically possible and made sense evolutionarily wise.
You know, I know something that's crazy.
They made a whole fucking language, and then they named the character who is supposed to represent like human selfishness a few syllables off of selfish.
Also, they used papyrus as their font.
Yes, and they used papyrus. Thank you, Ryan Gosling.
Now, here's something. Before we get into characters, you and I should start off at this point. If you're looking at my highlighting on our noting tab, I feel like we should get into this because I was fucking baffled by how this movie began. I don't know about you.
It goes previously on Avatar.
Already, like I know I said, like in the first 40 minutes, and it might be shorter. If I don't think it is, I think it's the first 30 to 40 minutes was all the catch up.
It really, it's a beefy chunk of.
And the fact that, like, you know, I guess they had to do it because it's been, you know, a better part of a decade.
You can't guarantee your audience has seen this, except you can because it's the highest grossing film of all time.
Yeah. And at the same time, it was just filled with absolutely no creativity and complete conveniences.
There are parts I liked about it. Parts I liked where I'm just like, okay, that's interesting. Like getting to see Jake Sully and Neytiri have a family and watching
that was fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
Do you like Jake Sully's monologue over everything?
Yeah, it's
like the driving force through the film.
It's funny because in the first film, you have a in-story reason why you're hearing it.
Yeah.
And you just don't get that with this movie.
Convenience number one.
The humans come back. And they come back with giant dropships that just eviscerate and destroy and burn the forest and all the animals in like a 10 mile radius. And the spaceships open up and bulldozers and mech suits come out and just start leveling everything. And we see later in the movie,
this whole interplanetary war.
Yeah. And I'm like,
well, I guess not interplanetary, but just like in the jungle mainly.
If your whole reason for coming to the planet in the first place, as per the first movie, is to get your unobtainium, and you could do that the whole time, why didn't you?
Number one. It's a good question. But now it turns out also Earth, we need a new home, and it's going to be Pandora.
Yeah, Earth kind of sucks. I guess that's why.
All right.
Firstly. Oh, but don't worry, because James Cameron said we're totally going to Earth in Avatar 5.
But why?
Yeah, I know.
Especially if, like, the avatars can't necessarily breathe Earth oxygen. They can for a few hours, which they clarified in this film, by the way.
No, I thought it was humans. Oh, no.
Humans can't breathe.
Yes, no, you're right.
Humans cannot breathe Pandora oxygen air, but Pandorians, Na'vi, if you will, they can breathe for a few hours.
That's right, yes.
On Earth oxygen levels.
Every so often they just need to...
Just in case you were wondering what the crack masks were.
Right, yeah. No, I got that.
All right. All right. We're getting a little ahead of ourselves.
Are we?
I don't know if you noticed, but when they were like going through the whole montage of like, you know, them starting a family and everything, but use shots and just up-res them from at the first Avatar, like just put new textures and shit on them. Because it's the same angles and everything. I'm like, they fucking use the same models and they just added a belly over Neytiri. What the fuck's happening? Did you see that?
I think there's definitely a few repurposed shots here and there.
But, like, who remembered that? I mean, at the same time, I guess it kind of works out for them. Because one, who remembers all the shit from the first film? I only remember because we watched the first. Yeah, you and I are raising our hands. But, I mean, like, you know. But that's just us. Yeah. And maybe 2 billion other people or whatever the fuck. But at the same time, I'm just thinking to myself, like, dude, that's kind of fucking lazy. You had 10 years to make a new animated new shot and you couldn't fucking do it? Strike one. But that's not even the first time they do that. Because then they're also, later in the film, they reuse dialogue. Like, it matters.
So, this is, that's the stuff that killed me. Like, it's not even that they reused the dialogue. It's that they reused the dialogue in, like, identical scenes.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, when...
And I think they thought they were being really clever.
I think they thought they were being clever, because, like, when Jungleman is, like, giving his, like, his speech to all the avatarized Marines, and he tells them, like, you know, he says, like, a military soldier and an avatar body is a potent mix. I'm like, you... Why?
Yeah.
I get it. It's like in Terminator 2 when he says, I'll be back. And you're like, aha, that's what he said.
They were allowed to do that time because I think they only did it once.
And also because it's a good line.
And also because Terminator 2 came out how long after the first film?
About 12 years.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
No fucking way.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Between Avatar 1 and
2? No, not 12. I meant, like, between Terminator 1 and Terminator 2. Excuse me.
Yeah, about 12 years.
12 years between Terminator 1 and Terminator 2's release.
Terminator 1 came out in the year of 1984.
And Terminator 2 is 1991. That's not 12, that's like 7.
That is not 12 years. So, I'm wrong.
That's still a long time. They didn't have the internet then. I don't know what the release is.
All I'm saying is that there's also a scene in this movie when they're like trying to wrangle like what are the dragon things called? The flying creatures. And someone's like, "Oh, you need to wrangle the thing." And I'm pretty sure Jungleman was like, "Outstanding." And I'm like, "That's what Jake Sully said in the same scene."
Let's talk about the Jungleman's return, because this was, by and large, the thing that I think I hated the most. That was the most...
Really?
I thought
it was honestly the most interesting. I love a good villain. No. I'm not saying this is a good villain. I'm just saying I enjoy a good villain. And getting to watch... First of all, I like how James Cameron knows how to do, like, wave away sci-fi bullshit. So they're like, this little chip will make me, it's my entire brain and personality and memories. right before I went into battle, and then
oh, how convenient that right before you went into battle, your whole consciousness was downloaded and copied and uploaded into a brand new fucking body, so you could return.
You know, they don't dwell on it, so it didn't really bother me. But I just like, you know, hey, listen,
they
I like that.
But they expect you to be like, yeah, be okay with this.
Yeah, it's,
I was not
it's
okay.
Whatever.
I was absolutely
listen,
not okay with that.
I'm accepting that there's a planet full of blue cat people who fucking connect to animals with their hair, and the trees are the internet. I can believe that.
That sounds way more logical than downloading your consciousness.
Whatever, I can buy it.
Which is super convenient, because like, we were talking earlier about the news that Hideo Kojima would, after he passes, he wants to download his consciousness into AI to keep creating things. I'm like,
Kojima will be the death of us all.
Well, or himself.
He's gonna death stranding us. And then we will be the Metal Gear Solid.
So overall, I just felt like it was just that segment was a little too convenient and was a big stretch. I don't know. This didn't come first. This the before thing that we just came off another convenience. I don't know if you remember that the body of Sigourney Weaver, her avatar, was pregnant and gave birth to another Navi. And I'm like, and they actually say like. And we don't know how. Like, there's no explanation.
No, they speculate that maybe Norm and her, you know, scooted off to the woods.
Not
and,
in the film.
Yeah, they speculate on it. They don't confirm it.
No. But I'm just talking about in the introduction in the monologue. The kids speculated that later in the film.
Oh yeah, yes.
Is also not. I don't think that's true at all. I think I'm going to tell you what it's going to be, and I hate that I can already predict this now in this moment. It's going to relate somehow into the spirit of Awa or whatever the hell, fifth
yeah,
film.
Yeah, no, she's the Jesus of their world.
Which, also, dumb idea.
Listen, James Cameron's been doing Christ allegories forever. John Connor. Jason Cameron.
James Cameron needs to do himself a favor and forsake his faith. I don't know, dude.
Oh, weird. I'll say this. I just feel like there were a lot of decisions in this film that I'm sure James Cameron's like, I have the whole idea planned out and I can see the whole picture. So I'm going to go ahead and make this stuff. And it might seem cliche now, but it's going to be, oh man, when Avatar 6 comes out, the asses will
be
in those seats.
One? I thought we were just talking about 5.
He talked about going as far as like 8, that was the time when he was like, oh, but I'll be too old, so I'll have to teach someone how to make these films, because I don't care who you are, you don't know how to make these films. And I'm like, eat a dick, James Cameron, eat a, it doesn't have to be a big one, a small penis. Anyway, yeah, so what else from the beginning really stuck out? It just kind of hits the reset button on like the whole thing. They go, the first movie ends, and they go, and this is our concrete ending. Clap, we're done.
I want to say that whole catch up moment and that build up is kind of also help us to restructure how we're supposed to look at this film. That it's no longer like an adventure. Action film, so to speak, but it's also now we have all these.
It's a family film.
It's a family film. There's a brand new structure. We're bringing in some coming of age and themes and introducing, I don't know, 8 new characters basically.
Too many.
And also have to build their relationships, and we also have to show how young they are, because every other sentence ends in bro.
Yeah, it's a very... I feel like James Cameron, he does not know how to write young people speak. Going back to Terminator 2, man.
I don't think that we ever said bro.
John Connor certainly has a lot of, like, oh, man, I'm a kid, chill out, dickweed, and stuff. And I'm just like, okay, well, I'm sure James Cameron really thinks the kids... the kids say that.
It takes a little bit of time getting used to.
But of those kids, one of them in particular is Spider, the son of the Jungleman.
Colonel Miles
and
Quaritch.
Yeah, and he is a source of what should be really intense drama, but he's just kind of there. And this kid was raised knowing his father was basically like, you know, space Hitler. And as soon as he shows up, he's not immediately like, no, fuck you, dude. He's like, oh, maybe my dad's got a heart after all, which, shock and surprise, he does. But yeah, that leads to a very tense standoff later in the film where Neytiri has a spider captive and Jungleman has Kiri, I think, captive. And they agree to all stand off because they love their children. Great humanizing moment. I'm just mad we never got a scene, and this is why I'm excited for Avatar 3, when we never got a scene of, like, Neytiri and Spider being like, damn, you totally, like, held a knife to my throat and, like, threatened to kill me. And are we cool? It's, I definitely was like, we're just not going to talk about this.
I mean, I liked how during the majority of the film, they talk about, like, the, you know, the struggles that they had kind of, Neytiri had with, you know, raising their children with this
right.
human kid around, because she still is right. very much apprehensive against the star people or
understandably.
And so I enjoyed that. I also, what I thought was an interesting way to introduce the character, you know, to talk about his beginnings, was that he was a baby on the space station, or just like a real, like, you know, super adolescent
yes.
child. And so he couldn't go back into cryo sleep or whatever the fuck they called it. And so he had to stay there the whole time. And then also forming the relationship between him and his paternal, you know, sperm donor, if you will. It was an interesting thing. I feel like...
Oh, no, don't say that, because then I only think about that movie where Stephen Lang played the blind guy who gets his own cum shot in his mouth.
Oh, God. Anyway... But I feel like there was a really big missed opportunity to focus on a different angle that's very much only touched on the surface in these films. And
that is?
Just prejudice, a sense of racism, real, like, kind of, like, colonial kind of, like, critiques, as well as...
yeah, I guess...
Almost, like, kind of, like, white savior complexes.
It's definitely like the potential for it is there. I just think James Cameron has absolutely
he's not the filmmaker to do it.
He's not the filmmaker to do it, and I don't think he has any interest in doing it.
But I feel like
James Cameron.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I would just I think it would be cool. I just think James Cameron would he's the kind of guy, he wants to tell a very simple story with a lot of flash behind it.
I just feel like it would have the level of quality, like coming after the last film where like we went through all those things at a very vanilla level, but also was a white savior film. This guy like went and mm-hmm. basically became, oh, it just so happened that he became the best Navi ever. And he's not even like, he's a fucking four fingered, five fingered fuck.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I'm saying?
That is a thing. The four fingers, the five fingers or the three fingers. Yeah. That's a,
you know what I liked that they did with one of the kids? Well, I liked until they fucking killed him at the end of the film. Was that the firstborn son
yeah.
only had like the three fingers and the thumb.
Right. And yeah, like, he's a true Navi.
He was true Navi in every, but all the other kids, they all had five finger hands. And I feel like, well, that sucks that they just killed the one like actual almost right. like more Navi than human mix and all that.
I will say.
What was his name?
These
names are.
The oldest son?
It's not Nuk-Tuk.
Nateam.
Nateam?
Yeah. And
he's the oldest one?
Yeah, and now I will say this to the film's credit: I think
Lolak is the younger brother.
I think James Cameron knows how to find the beating heart beneath all the sci-fi technological nonsense and stuff. But you know, he's got the thumbs up in Terminator 2 as the Terminator's dying. He's got Ripley in Aliens bonding with Newt, so he knows how to tell an emotional story. And I will say, bookending the story of Avatar 2 with the birth and death, well, I should say the ceremony to celebrate Nitaim's birth and the funeral where they give him back to Awa, I was like, that is a very moving thing that I was not expecting to see in the film. And I thought it was good, especially because, like, listen, I can give these movies crap all day, but, like, if you allow yourself to kind of, like, understand the lore and accept the greater lore of this universe, then yeah. You go, like, the idea that they can, like, you know, use their hair to, like, connect with the thing, with the tree or whatever, and they can be with their son in memory. I'm like, that is a very, that's a very beautiful sentiment, and it's a very powerful bit of storytelling from Cameron, surrounded and preceded by 3 hours of a lot of nonsense. so the fact that I did feel something is, I would say, an achievement.
So, I want to talk about one of the other characters that I felt like maybe, or characters in some of her moments that I felt like did bring me some more interest in the film, that I thought they handled a lot of this stuff, I would say, interestingly enough to make me want to follow where they go with in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And that is with Sigourney Weaver's character and that of her daughter, Kiri, which I know you said you were a little...
I was
struggling with that one, but I don't know. I found that her character and the things that she went through in this film, while still just only left a lot more questions to be asked rather than answered, and we had her rocky start, I was definitely interested to see where... I am interested to see where they go with her character in the future. And also, I was really happy to see that Sigourney Weaver was able to traverse the role of a younger, you know, a person that is not her.
There
other
are times I think
that
I
was
think,
very helpful.
Yeah, I think there are times that I think the voice didn't work for me.
Okay,
I just felt like she sounds like an adult trying to do a kid's voice a few times. Obviously, when it's mocap, when it's performance capture, it doesn't matter that she's an old person. I was never in a point where I was like, wow, I don't think I'm looking at a child. I'm looking at an adult. No, the effect works. I just think there's a few times where I'm just like, the delivery of that line and just the way the voice kind of hangs in certain scenes, I do feel kind of stuck out to me. Overall, it's not bad. Yeah, I'm interested to see where that... where that character goes to. I want to talk about a character I think was severely underserved in this film, and that's Neytiri. She does almost nothing in this film. She has a few pretty badass, like, rampages against a lot of the humans. They have that motif, that recurring motif in the film, that jungleman sees her arrow... fletching on her arrows, and that's how, like, he knows it's her, the one who killed him. So, like, that's there, and it's an interesting thing, and, like, she's badass, obviously, but, like, almost every scene in this movie with her is her crying or screaming about some kind of loss, or talking about how they need to, like, that Jake needs to do stuff. And I'm just like, it would have been nice if she just had, like, a bit more agency in this film and a bit more to do besides freaking out and, again, having white savior coming to be like, no, be strong. You know, it'd be cool if she was like, I can be strong.
Because we've obviously seen her be strong independently of Jake Sully's. What happened to all that pizzazz, you know?
I don't know, man. I just felt like a lot. There was like, it was probably like when Natam died, but I was like, this is like the fifth time she has cried in this film in a three.
But I think it's also a generalization of like motherhood when you think about it as well. Like, and it's like I said, it's very surface scratchy for James Cameron to kind of think that like, oh, now that she's a mom, she's like not this like, you know, badass that she used to be. And it goes to show, like, even in that very first scene that, like I said, that they reused, they just added, made her pregnant, and, mm-hmm. like, she couldn't do her boas, right, just because she was pregnant. But I feel right. like, I don't know that that would be the case, especially for this person. Like, not every pregnant woman in the world is incapable of doing, you know, like, all the things that they were. I don't know. Like, that. I feel like that is, by and large, just a generalization, and
she has not her to moments. Her
character at all.
She has her moments where, like, you know, later after Natam dies, and like she and Jake go to like free the rest of their kids, and like kind of like get the drop on the humans or like the human mm-hmm. avatars.
Yeah.
Where, and a lot of people, I've seen a lot of people online pointing this out, where in the scene when she's killing a bunch of them, we don't see her face. We don't see, we only see her in like shadows and stuff. And it feels like very, she feels very dangerous and very like, freaky. And it's in those moments where you're like, oh, this is awesome. Why couldn't it all be like this? Or at least like, why couldn't she be this badass warrior the whole time? Not like this crying woman. There's nothing wrong with being a woman. There's nothing wrong with having emotion. But it's like, I feel like James Cameron kind of didn't know what to do with her in this film.
Would you have preferred... So, I mean, this is a very binary way of, like, thinking about this. But it's one of the first thoughts that came to my mind. Mm-hmm. Like, when you think about, like, in the animal kingdom
yeah.
on planet Earth, you think about, like, the lioness and her cubs.
Right.
Or, like, Mama Grizzly. Or, like, even, like... Here in Florida, Zach, we deal with gators.
Yeah.
And they always say that the mothers are also the most vicious and the most dangerous, especially when you mess with their kids.
Yeah.
And, like, I feel like there was a lot more reason to believe that, like, oh, this person who's not necessarily human, you know, like, what, you know, they could have added all these other qualities to also show, like, and kind of provided that consistency that we have of her character that we've already seen, you know, in another 2.5 hour long film. Rather than like we really just got like a very, I don't want to say a very dumbed down version, but it feels like that.
Almost. I just feel like this whole movie, it's like the humans come back, burn the forest. The first thing we see of Neytiri is she's crying like crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then it's like she's like coming to Jake and be like, Jake, what should we do? And he's like, I guess we'll fly away and
go. She should be telling Jake what to do.
Right. And I mean, like, Jake is the one who like leads them to like the water people, and then the whole time there, she's like, you should probably figure out what we're going to be doing. And yeah. then, I don't know. I just feel like she could have had a much more dynamic story, a lot more going on. But that's fine. We'll just, you know, wanted to touch on that. The kids in general, I don't know about you. I saw this with a buddy of ours, Marcelo. I'll give you a shout out in the podcast. But about the third or fourth or fifth or sixth or seventh time, the kids did not listen to the parents about staying away from the action and, like, charged yeah. in. We were like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
You could actually, yeah, you could count how many times. They did, and then also that they could report back. Oh, wait. Oh, well, I'll bring this up later.
but, like, but, even after Natam is killed, right, and you go, like, you... Your actions have literally led to your brother dying. Stop doing shit. And he doesn't stop. Yeah. Lowok or whatever the
Yeah, it's just like that constant need to prove himself to like he's not
I like, wanted to be like nobody's impressed. Nobody's impressed, yeah. Nobody cares. Sit down and shut the fuck up, go play with your whale.
It it was one of those things that, like, I feel like if they would have just kind of focused on that aspect at least once or twice, they didn't need to say it so many different times. Because I also feel like that was them. Like, that's what I talk about. Like, this film was too long. There were things that definitely could have been cut out. Like, they could have cut out a conversation between the parents, like, stay here. Mm-hmm. You don't need to do that every single time. Because, like, I think that to a certain degree, it's also understood. And, like, when the kid, because if the kids or somebody shows, like, opposition to the idea, like, oh, wait, like, even then, I think that's where, like, the convenience in the writing kept showing up, like, towards the end. And also, at that point, it also becomes a trope that, like, of course, like, oh, they don't listen and they go after it. But I think that's also the nature of, like, coming-of-age stories, you know, to a certain degree, that, like, that kind of focus around, like, kids in dangerous situations or doing things, especially, like, when there's parents involved or other, like, authority figures. They're allowed that at least maybe once in the film, but not, like, three or four times, dude. I think that's when it becomes kind of an issue.
Yeah.
In some of the instances that, like, you know, Loak, that's,
the younger son.
So I liked some of his story. Mm-hmm. I felt like there was the parts that when he met with this whale creature,
mm-hmm.
like, and they had that relationship and he had that connection. Like, I thought that was a very interesting, like, we've seen that kind of relationship before in other films. And
sure. A boy and like his dog. Like,
both of the castaways kind of come together, and then, you know, whether they realize it or not.
Right.
And then later on, like, you know, in the truth unfolds and all the fun other cliches. I think it was a nice kind of call. I don't want to say callback, but it was nice to see that again. I don't think I've seen that in a while. It felt familiar and it felt good to me.
It was fine.
And also I felt like, you know, there's some relatability there. I don't mind the kid's story. I feel like I could see, like, those kids in this film, I could see with, you know, my little brother and his friends, or, like, sure. my niece and my nephew, or, like, it resonated to a certain degree that I didn't hate their characters. I didn't dislike them. I was interested to a certain degree. I would like to see kind of where they're all going to go in the future.
The kids are
more
fine.
So than anything else. You remember that photo of the kids that, like, they released, like, mm-hmm. in 2017?
Yeah.
And I'm like, who are we looking at here? Because I don't know any of these children. I have no idea what the context of all this is. I actually went back and looked at it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, huh, would have never thought.
James Cameron said something funny recently that, like, I kind of made me, like, again, kind of like, James Cameron, what the fuck are you talking about? Where he said that he wanted to shoot the films, so all the films together, because he wanted to avoid what he called the Stranger Things effect. In that he wanted all the kids to still be kids when they filmed the movies, when they filmed all the sequels, because he said that in the later seasons of Stranger Things, all the kids look like adults. And I'm like, couple of things, James Cameron. One, no, they don't. They're a very young-looking cast. Two, you're doing motion and performance capture. It does not matter how old your actors are. One of your actors playing children is like a 70-year-old woman.
See, that's a good point.
James Cameron, shut the fuck up.
They could have pulled a Jake Sully on Spider and turned him into a Na'vi.
Yeah, I guess, but
I feel like if they download consciousness, they can get him into the reason, body like that kid wants.
That was only like a special, because Jake Sully was so in touch with nature that it worked. Like, it was a miracle that it worked, because it didn't work.
So how many miracles are going to be in this series? Because it seems like that was the only miracle.
The trees are the internet. I don't fucking know. Let's stop talking about the kids and the stuff. Let's talk about the characters that this movie forgot about. And I'm talking the Ocean tribe. Because, holy shit, they show up, they do a few things, they teach them the way of water, and then they just disappear.
Yeah.
Like, they are just not in the last act of this film.
I think the last time we see the daughter of Kate Winslet's character, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. is like when Loak says, like, he's gonna go, and he leaves his dead brother with her.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like, pretty much it.
And that's the last time we see her until they bury the body.
And also then, like, at the very end when, like, Jake Sully's like, we're your race now. Don't worry, I've done this before. But, yeah, like, I'm like, why were they in the film? Why was it called The Way of Water? Like, if you were just gonna sideline them for the entire last act of the film. I don't know.
They also dropped, like, the title of the film. They said they name-dropped it. Oh, yeah. They said The Way of Water. And I did not like that.
No, it was whatever. It's just, you know, that
I was like, oh, they said the thing, but the thing sucked.
Oh, man. And Avatar then, hey,
2, Return of the Jungle would have been way better.
How about, like, they waited until, like, more than halfway through the film to be like, we don't need unobtainium anymore, but this whale brain oil that, like, slows aging or something.
All right, so talk about interesting convenience, because in the theater, I was, like, watching the film. I was next to my wife, and we talked about it. Oh,
congratulations on getting married, Chris.
Have been married since the last episode of recording.
Since the last episode?
Well, since the last episode, I no longer fiance.
Right? Yeah. No. Yeah. You got married. I mean, I was there, but what I mean is, like, I mean, like, you, our audience knows now.
Thanks, audience. Appreciate the love. Back to what I was saying. I'm watching it. I'm talking to her. I'm like, you know what's funny? We haven't heard anything about unobtainium at all. Mm-hmm. Literally 2 seconds later, they're like, the most important thing about these whales is this. Your liquid here, it sells for $70 million on Earth, basically keeps humans alive forever. And I'm like, oh wait, but, like, what does this matter? Also, I want you to think about this.
Yeah,
those two characters, the doctor and the whaler,
Well,
played
one
by
was,
one Jermaine Clement, Dr. Gavin, and Brendan Cowell as Scoresby. Why did Scoresby get to keep an accent and Jermaine Clement had to pretend like he wasn't from New Zealand?
I don't know. These characters were such cartoon characters.
As a big fan of Jermaine Clement in anything.
Yeah, no, he's great.
Seeing his face, I'm like, oh, I want him in the rest of the movie.
And the whole movie, he was just kind of just sassing the other guy.
Basically. Also, they completely forgot about the old crew, Joel David Moore. Who played Dr. Norm, whatever the hell his
name is. I mean, he's there at the beginning.
He's there a little bit in the middle.
Yeah, he's just... Oh, he... What does he do? He, like, helps people when they get injured and stuff, and, like, you go, okay.
Either way, was not a fan. He wasn't in the movie at all. Also, Edie Falco had a role.
Did you see the interview she was doing where she, like, she thought the movie had already come out and flopped because she filmed those scenes, like, 5 years ago?
Yeah. It was hilarious.
I also liked her, like, mech suit that just mimicked all of her movements. And it held the coffee cup for her to drink out of. So that means that she had to do this anyway to make the coffee. She had to move her own arm in the direction of drinking the coffee cup to get the mech arm to lift the coffee cup to her mouth. I'm like, just hold the cup, you fucking moron.
You know, to see Miss Soprano on screen.
Listen, no.
Camilla Soprano.
Edie Falco's great. I got nothing but respect for her.
It was nice to see her join the Avatar
version. I was really nice. It did kind of take me out because I'm like, Carm, what are you doing? But
I liked it. I was hoping her character would step. She was also forgotten about at some point in the film.
Oh yeah, and but I'll say this, kind of talking about the future of the series. There is no really, it's not a clean ending on this one. In that, in the first one, they go, okay, humans, you go bye bye, and then we get a nice closed ending. In this one, the humans are still there. Jungleman is still alive, and, like, the main cast does not know that, unless we get a thing in the Avatar 3 where they're like, the Jungleman survived, and he told us he survived, like, 10 minutes after the movie end, and we just didn't show that. So, there's, you know, I think Avatar 3, Electric Boogaloo, is going to be more interesting, because there's more, I feel like they've earned a lot of character drama. that they can really lean on. I definitely want Neytiri and Spider to have that scene, discussing her whole holding him as a hostage thing. And here's my hot take. Here's my prediction for the long-term trajectory of the series. Jungleman, by the end of the series, will be a good guy.
I feel like that'll happen too.
Yeah. I was like,
I don't think he talks in an interview where he talks like, yeah, he's gonna go through like an unexpected drastic change. I'm like, oh, so you mean
he's the
you
Zuko?
Know, he's just gonna go from one end to the meter to the other. Not everybody's the Zuko of everything, Zach.
He is the Zuko of
oh
this.
My
he,
God.
We're gonna find out his tragic backstory in the next one. And Stephen Lang's
tragic backstory is he died.
His tragic backstory is also like you're gonna find out about like his like early days as a Marine, and James Cameron's gonna start talking about how awesome the digital de-aging they do is, so much better than Marvel, and then we're gonna see young Stephen Lang, and it's gonna be good. I'm just saying this movie was his second chance, and now he's gotten a third chance. And we've established that he has enough of enough compassion within his character to at least be, at least like he feels something when someone holds his son at knife point. So like he has the capacity to be reasoned with. So I'm like, yeah, this guy's gonna be like a big ally in down the line. Let me ask you two things on a more technical aspect about this film, because I know we're kind of cruising along on the runtime of this episode, but I want to ask you two things. One, the first question is actually a two-parter. One, did you see it in 3D?
I saw IMAX 3D, okay, or LIMAX 3D.
But you saw it in more or less the intended way. Did you feel the 3D was at any time necessary?
I saw the points where it like we got the 3D element. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think at one point there was like a tail whip in my face.
Sure.
But like, you know, there was.
Was there any point when you're like, this had to be 3D?
No, I think I gave up on 3D a number of years ago.
Yeah.
Like I think after the first Avatar, like it was fine, but I don't think 3D. Like I think there's this notion that we need to be like immersed in films, but I think producers and technical thought provokers took it way too seriously. They're like, oh no, we're actually going to put you in the film.
Smell-o-vision.
Exactly. And I think as a gimmick, it's expired. I think it's past its time. And I think everybody now, audience, viewers, and goers everywhere, is all on the same belief that like, you know, it's all right, but it's unnecessary and it's expensive.
Yes.
For whatever, like, we don't need this. Like, we can have the same amount of enjoyment. And also, like, as long as you have a good quality screen and, like, a good, like, good sound and everything, and, like, I feel like you'll get all the same kind of effects mm-hmm. desired on your audience that, you know, were intended.
First question, part three. If either of the Avatar movies was not released in 3D, do you think they would be the highest grossing films of all time? If they had to just have normal ticket sales and not twice as much for IMAX.
You know, can I tell you something? I feel like you could actually look that up.
Probably.
Think about it like this. Think about how many times Avatar has been viewed via streaming. How many times Avatar has been viewed, and how many times the DVD was purchased or the Blu-ray was purchased.
Yeah.
And if you think about that, like, which those all carry like a certain dollar amount to themselves, which I'm sure is incredibly substantial as well, I think it probably would be.
Maybe.
Now, you know, who's to say though? Like, we don't live in that world. Like, I'll tell you this. When Endgame and Infinity War and all those Marvel movies came out, like, there's never a push to see them in 3D, mm-hmm. even though they're all released in IMAX 3D as well. It's just said, oh, go watch it in the best quality, which is the IMAX.
Yeah, I think and I then, saw Doctor Strange.
They also have like they have the fucking Dolby, and they have the other nonsense as well. Like, as long as you're seeing it in one of those, you know, like, you're gonna get the best. I mean, IMAX.
I think I saw Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness. I think I saw that in 3D on accident. I didn't realize I had bought a 3D ticket and then, like, showed up and they're like, here you go. And I was like,
didn't we see Black Panther in 3D on accident?
Maybe.
We saw Black Panther 2.
I distinctly remember going to see Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness, being handed a pair of 3D goggles and being like, fuck. All right. My last question of the night. Where do you stand on this film's inclusion of, or I should not inclusion, but use of 48 frames per second?
I think that's a part of what I don't like about the Avatar series in general, because the last film, I think, is also, maybe it's not the frame rate, at least it's specifically when there's like humans on screen and not just like the animated characters.
Right. See,
because
I felt, even though I know enough to know that there are times, especially when Jake Sully and Jungleman are like flying around each other, trying to shoot each other off their dragon things, that they really amp up the frames per second to the point that the film looks sped up. And I know it's just because our eyes aren't adjusted to that kind of frame rate. But I could imagine somebody who doesn't know what 48 frames per second is, doesn't realize it's happening, being like, why did they suddenly like fast forward this part of the film?
I think the science of like film, and when it really comes down to it, like, I think 24 frames a second, 2398, if you're a purist, is like, it was put to a science, you know, like that's what makes film. Like, that's what, like, our eyes register that and we recognize that. That's why we could always tell the difference between like 24 and then 30. And then from 30 to 60, that's why like most TV and stuff like broadcast is either 24. 30 or 60, like sports or whatever hell.
I feel
like 24 is film and like film television, so to speak. You know, like, or like TV programming that's like narrative. And it's, you know, that's funny that you say that, because it's actually my biggest issue with like telenovelas and things like
Days of Our Lives. And British television.
And British television is because I hate the way they shoot it, because that takes me out.
It just looks cheap.
It looks cheap. It looks jarring. It looks like, and like, I also find the lighting's weird and everything. Like, it's not the way, I mean, and maybe it's also a personal thing. Because I think for Britain, it's also like there's a network standards thing, like across like the whole country. Like it's a PAL.
I think we've just been trained. We've been programmed.
Well, we have been programmed. Like, maybe we like it more just because that's what we've been exposed to basically all of our lives. Because imagine when they were watching films way back in the day at like 12 or 18 frames a second before.
Yeah.
I mean, that was like early 20th century. You know, versus like now, like imagine when that shift was happening from those frame rates, like, you know, old Chaplin films and Buster Keaton to like, okay, then we get Wizard of Oz, you know, like that must have been crazy for them.
But like, the thing is, like,
or maybe there was a better adjustment period.
I just feel like, you know, it's funny when they came out with the Hobbit films, I think at least the first one, Peter Jackson really tried to push the 48 frames per second on that film, and it got a very bad negative reaction. People,
I mean, it's why the Lord of the Rings have also just look way better.
Yeah, yeah. I just think there's a lot of scenes. Listen, the film looks good. Avatar 2 looks good, start to finish. But there's just a few times where I was like, they're moving, just like the everything's moving too. Like, I don't even know what the word is. It's not fast. It's just the frame
noticeably
rate.
Noticeably different.
Noticeably different to the point where I'm just like.
Noticeably uncomfortably different.
Made me go like, could they not have done this in 24 frames per second?
I
What did they gain from this? From this,
my personal taste is that I think, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, your animation was obviously broken. You could fix that, but like this general science, of like the way that our eyes are able to perceive all of these things and like how we shoot film and how it should be edited and everything like that. Like, that's not an achievement we need to move into. We're not shooting sports or live action right. stuff like to that degree. So, I mean, that's what I have to say about that.
And what I think about with this film that I think is unfortunate is that the legacy of the original Avatar is that it's a whatever film in terms of like creativity and writing and all that, but its legacy is in its technical, what it proved films could be. Because up until that point, we had gotten some motion capture that was good, and some 3D characters that were good, but to have like a very seamless world and tell basically a whole story, where so much of it is motion capture and so pretty much the entire world is built from the ground up, Avatar showed us it was possible. I don't think this film will go down in history as well remembered as the first Avatar.
I'll tell you something. I think in terms of like historical impact, I think the first Avatar probably means more to like society and the world of filmmaking than its sequel. I think, for whatever technical achievement that they needed to wait to achieve, like I said, too little too late, because it doesn't matter how good it's going to look, because you know what, Zach? We got Thanos like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
3 years ago.
Yeah.
And like, we already saw where technology was going, because when we went from Avatar,
mm-hmm.
we went to Tron Legacy.
Yeah.
We went to the first Avengers film, and then the second, and then the whole, we went back to Pirates of the Caribbean. We went to Journey to the Center of the Earth. We went to all these, like, we had Godzilla.
Yeah.
We had Kong. We had Planet of the Apes, War for the Apes. We had all these films.
The entire Apes series in between.
We had all these films led by all these giants of technological advancing cinemaniacs, we'll call them.
Sure.
Cinemaniacs, that's mine. I'm going to copyright that.
Cool.
That it probably already exists.
Maybe.
But like, to the point where I'm like, dude, like, I hate to say it, James Cameron, but you're not really relevant anymore in that degree. Like, this film's not going to be remembered for that. This film's going to be remembered as the sequel to the first Avatar.
Basically, yeah. And I think that's interesting in that, like, until he moves on from Avatar, he's kind of done, unless one of his movies, again, breaks that, like, becomes the highest grossing film of all time.
But it's like, I can't imagine.
He's done making headlines.
Even if this film becomes the highest grossing film of all time, then that's all it'll be remembered for. Because you know what? It'll be remembered for the dollar value, but not for anything else, because it still didn't have the technical achievement. It just had really great marketing.
Right.
It had mass audience appeal.
Yeah.
But like it didn't have groundbreaking nothing to it. It really didn't.
Yeah, and that's maybe
video games have gotten better in the last 12 years.
Yeah.
Insanely good.
And that, I think, is probably the worst thing about the film, is that at the end of the day, it may end up being just a forgettable thing. But you know what? At the end of the day, I don't regret seeing it. I had a decent enough time watching it. And I may go see it again, because I know my parents want to see it and stuff. So I'm like, yeah, maybe I'll go see it with them. But
listen, I know we spent the last hour and a half like really dogging on this.
We kind of did.
I mean, at one point, I'm like, oh, we should say something nice, but like,
it's a pretty film. It's pretty.
It is very pretty.
It's pretty. I still
the underwater scenes reminded me very much of Finding Nemo from 2003.
I still have strange thoughts about the Na'vi women.
Interesting.
Edit that out.
I will show you one Happy Harry cartoon, Harry Partridge, if you're familiar.
No.
regardless, I did want to make a nod. There were some enjoyable bits to this film.
The action and violence were fucking awesome.
Well, you know, they... All right, listen. When the guy had his arm stuck in a cable and then they actually ripped his arm off...
Yes.
That was pretty hilarious.
Listen, listen.
I'll tell you what. I just thought that the things that happened like that and then the... Dude, the cliche where this happened on at least three or four times in the film, and I counted as they happened. Somebody with a gun was shooting. They would click, run out of ammo. So what do? They check their strap on their chest for ammunition. Uh-huh. They're out. They check their belt on the side.
Sure.
And on the other side, they were out of ammo, and they're like, fuck. And then they changed to melee combat.
Uh-huh.
And then that happened 3 to 4 times in this film in the same exact fashion.
You know
first
what?
Up, then side to side, and then fuck it.
You know what also happened?
Jack Johnson and Tom O'Leary.
You know what also happened hilarious. Several times in this film, and I never got tired of seeing it, was watching human beings get just taken out by these javelin-sized arrows and just ragdolling.
Always amazing.
Oh my god. Listen, I will say this. James Cameron's a weird guy and kind of an asshole, but the man knows how to direct action so fucking good. Terminator 2, I don't care what anyone says, it's still a perfect action film.
I'll tell you what, they probably do, like, with the human actors that aren't animated in those mm-hmm. scenes, like, imagine the wire work of,
oh my
like,
god.
Standing there and then being jerked like you just did, like,
yeah.
Like, that, I would actually like to be on set to watch that happen, that whole thing.
And just, like, the man knows, like, the whole train, like, right early in the film, the whole train crash.
That was pretty cool.
That was the derailment. Just... Everything in the final battle, just watching dudes get taken out is... I'm like...
As sad as the great fire was in the beginning of the film, watching it incinerate everything, that was some pretty animation.
Yeah. So,
it was very visceral.
Listen, I won't say, like, I didn't enjoy this film. I enjoyed it. I had a good time watching it. There's a lot that, like, once you sit down and you think about it, I'm cursed now because, you know, I've said this before, but, like, my family likes to joke, like, I hate this film, the first Avatar. I don't hate the first Avatar. I like the first Avatar. I just don't like it that much.
I think the reason why we're so critical of movies is because we love movies and we understand what's wrong with movies, but, like, we still go and watch
and put ourselves. A good movie and a bad movie still allow you to talk about the art of filmmaking. If a movie is bad, it is a chance for you to talk about why it's bad and how the art of filmmaking is done. And, you know, I think that, like, this isn't a bad film. It's not. I just objectively will not say it's a bad film. But
just because there's things that we didn't like doesn't mean that that's fact.
No,
like that.
There, I have seen better made and better written films than Avatar that I just have no interest in watching ever again. But this one, I'm like, yeah, I will definitely see this movie again.
I'll tell you something, and I don't think I'm not very apologetic about this. You could say I'm unapologetic about it. I do not think this film is worth $2 billion. I do not think this film was
That's
worth
fair.
Waiting 12 years for. I do not think this film was worth an acquisition of an entire film studio or the implementation in a theme park or anything or whatever. I do not think this film is worth all that. I think this film in its entirety right now, the way we've seen it and in what it came out to be, like in its final product, I think easily could have been made within 3 to 4 years, if not a little less, after the release of the original, to whatever varying degree of quality, whether it be the same now, like visual quality at least,
mm-hmm.
Whatever then, I think it would have done the exact same then as it did now, and just probably would have cost a lot less and probably would have been much less of a headache for everybody else involved. And that's kind of sad, I think. And which is, I feel like that's just how I feel about it because I think I have the same enjoyment now. I feel, if anything, I maybe would have had more enjoyment out of it if it came out earlier than I did now. Because now it's almost feel like, it's not like I'm disappointed, but it's like, wow, like, this is, in terms of like the year-end film, like, we were on top last year, Zach.
Yeah.
No Way Home, we were riding a high. And in essence, still riding that high.
A little
bit. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know if next year a film will come out toward the end of the year that'll bring me to that level.
What I don't you know what I enjoyed almost on the same.
I'll tell you what, we needed No Way Home after the disaster that The Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah.
And so you know what? We got it.
You know what?
So
I will also say this: thanks to Avatar: Return of the Jungle Man, I got to see on a very big screen the trailer for Oppenheimer.
Oh, me too.
And the trailer for the Barbie movie.
I walked into my theater too late, but I watched it.
The Barbie teaser.
It's amazing.
So
2001 Space Odyssey fans everywhere will love it.
Oh my god, I was like, this is funnier, this one teaser is funnier than some entire comedy movies I have seen.
It was great.
I'm scrolling down to see what's coming out next December that's like supposed to be the big thing. Oh, next year we're supposed to be getting the new Aquaman that's totally happening. Wonka, the Willy Wonka origin movie.
All right. Last thought before we wrap up, because I feel like we're, for the most part, we're about done.
Yes.
I also had a realization coming out of the film that mm-hmm. I feel like, I think this whole series, this franchise, if you will, probably would have been better suited for the streaming platform, which I realize is very anti-theater. James Cameron
would never do it. He would never do
it. No, but at the same time, for the content that you want to produce, you have no idea how much more fitting to like the idea of like a long format series. It has like, dude, this could have been Disney Plus's Game of Thrones.
It could have been.
But... And the thing is like because of his hard headedness, like the content's the same, the delivery method is different. But because the thing is, you don't need 3D. You don't need to invest like $500 million into tech because you know what? You're going to get the same quality nonsense anyways.
Well, it is what it is. And we're going to have to live with it. In the next Avatar, what are we going to call the next Avatar?
The Jungleman has returned. So,
Avatar 3, The Reckoning.
The Reckoning.
But, other than that, we got, you know...
What about The Prisoner of Pandora?
Ooh. How about the Earth... The Earth...
Avatar 3, answer. Last Stand.
Oh, no. I'll say this.
Third from
this,
Last
Stand. This episode is likely going to come out after the first of the year, in which case, happy 2023. There's a lot of things I wanted to cover before the end of the year, but... We've been kind of busy in this.
There was a wedding. There was vacations.
I wanted to take time to read and write and play the new Pokemon. hey, we're team Foy Coco all the way. Anyway, but there's other things. I definitely want to come back and do kind of like a wrap up of the year of 2022. So that might be coming down the pipeline. I want to talk about some of the stuff we didn't get to that. We didn't talk about fucking Andor.
Has been like on every news site as like the best show of 2022.
Because it was.
In comparison to the season finale of Better Call Saul?
Well, I just think...
Final season?
Best
new show, maybe?
You don't understand what... Andor meant to me in terms of like
spitting, it revitalized a lot of Star Wars love,
spitting in the face of everything that is modern Star Wars, and I kind of loved it. We'll get into it. I want to dedicate a much lengthier segment to Andor. I don't know about a whole episode because we have a lot of stuff in 2023 we want to get to, and I also want to get to our special episode or two to cover the Lord of the Rings Two Towers, because we missed that in 2022. But all of this will be coming to your ears, to your eyes, if you like staring at an unmoving screen, and to your hearts, direct from ours, your wonderful hosts, co-hosts, Chris Kitchen and Zach Strachman. If you don't hear from us before the new year, I hope you had a nice new year. I hope you didn't drink too much, and I hope you didn't blow your fingers off and or set anyone on fire with fireworks.
Dude, I had to show Anissa what an M80 was yesterday.
Hell yeah.
And she's like, what is that? I'm like, oh, it's basically a quarter stick of dynamite. I was going to say dynamite.
Oh, and our PSA. I think we made the same PSA last year. If you live in a particularly humid environment, don't leave your mortar tubes outside. The humidity will...
I would say fireworks are best kept in a nice dry area,
yes,
for long lasting.
You don't want your mortar tube to kind of lose its integrity and fall over and fire a mortar at people who you might enjoy spending time with.
Yeah.
This has been Script or Screen,
your number one source for firework related rules and regulations.
That's right. You can find us on all kinds of social media, on Instagram, on Facebook. I think there's a Twitter that we don't really use, but it probably exists.
And a YouTube account, @ScriptorScreen.
That's right. And a website,
www.scriptorscreen.com or anchor.fm/ScriptorScreen. There you can find all of our past, present, and future episodes.
That's right. This has been a fun one. This is a long time coming. Hey, we'll be keeping our eyes peeled for the next big bit of Avatar news.
See you in 12 years.
Bye.